place during with the emancipation era, you know, when people were freed and then became Jim Crow era, because the free people were being subjected to unfair laws, unfair behavior by the police officials, by the government officials, and we were extracted and taken off of the streets because we were, at the time, they called it vagrancy. So they have a bunch of different laws in different communities that are only there in those communities, and it doesn't exist outside of the place. Like, for example, I'll use bike riding, for example. There's been, in the early 70s and the early 80s, they made, in certain communities, riding a bike on the street illegal. So that was a way for people to get drawn into the system. You know, you make these petty laws, you make these petty rules that people can't really abide by because it's not fair. If I don't have a job, where do you want me to be? It's unfair, and it's not, you know, directed at a general population. It's directed at specific populations.
Ayuba Thomas, thank you so much for being on Law & Disorder. Before we have to let you go, can you tell us how listeners can follow your work?
You know, I'm terrible at social media, but I do have a page at Insight. That's where I work with the movements for mass incarceration. We post up things there regularly. I'm also part of the NYU PP Research Lab, so you can look that up. But right now, you just Google my name. You know, I've done some work, and I'm going to continue to do work. Hopefully, you know, you can get to it and see it.
That's A-I-Y-U-B-A, Ayuba Thomas. Thank you so much, Ayuba. It's been really great having you on Law & Disorder. You take it easy.
Thank you for having me, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, you guys are doing great work, and continue the great work.
If you have any comments or questions about this segment or any others, please visit us at lawanddisorder.org. That's lawanddisorder.org. One word, lawanddisorder.org.
A quick reminder, if you want to listen to Law & Disorder's podcast, one way to do that is visit lawanddisorder.org. There you'll see our podcast players now positioned at the bottom of each show's post. And there you can click on the three dots in the right corner of the player to either, well, download, subscribe, or visit the podcast page. Good, 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 good. That's great.
This is Law & Disorder.
Today on Law & Disorder, we have another in our series of shows about fascism by talking to Diane Feely, a labor historian and activist, about the consequences of unions in the U.S. continuing to place their workers' fate in the two major political parties.
She argues that doing so has not served their members well, has led to a growing fascistic divide in America, and that what is needed is a true workers' party.
Next, we talk with Attorney Maria LaHood from the Center for Constitutional Rights about her organization's lawsuit against President Biden, Secretary of State Blinken, and Secretary of Defense Austin, alleging that the U.S. government is complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza.
The lawsuit is now being considered at the highest level at the Federal Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit out of California, and it may eventually reach the U.S. Supreme Court.
Stay with us.
New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm Jim Lafferty, a decades-long political activist and once the national director of the National Lawyers Guild.
The forces of the gathering authoritarian storm in our country are evident in many ways. It is manifesting itself in powerful and continuing nationalism. in disdain for human rights, in the entwinement of government and religion, in a controlled mass media, in the protection of corporate power and the suppression of labor power, and in the encouragement of violence. The power of labor has been channeled into the Democratic and Republican parties, the twin parties of capitalism. We need a workers' party, but we don't even have the nucleus of one. Race and gender are formative in the building of authoritarian regimes. We see this in the USA. Haitians who are black have been accused of eating cats and dogs.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I swear there's no safety, whether it's a hospital, a school, or any place.
Israeli warplanes hit Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Gaza, killing at least four Palestinians, setting ablaze tents housing the displaced who sought safety there. Meanwhile, Israel's intensifying its siege on northern Gaza. Palestine's UN envoy calls the situation there a genocide within a genocide. We'll get an update from the director of Al-Awda Hospital in northern Gaza, who says it will continue its operations there despite Israeli threats that they must evacuate. Then Israel attacks the UNIFIL base twice this weekend in southern Lebanon as Israel accuses the United Nations UNIFIL peacekeeping forces there of failing to stop Hezbollah attacks.
Mr. Secretary General, get the UNIFIL forces out of harm's way. It should be done right now, immediately.
This comes as the Biden administration is sending an advanced anti-missile defense system and 100 U.S. troops to Israel as Israel prepares to launch retaliatory strikes against Iran. Meanwhile, a Hezbollah drone strike on an Israeli army base in Binyamina, just near Haifa, kills four Israeli soldiers. We'll speak with Palestinian-American journalist Rami Khoury. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Biden administration sending an advanced anti-missile defense system and 100 U.S. troops to Israel as Israel prepares to launch retaliatory strikes against Iran. In a statement, a Pentagon spokesperson said, quote, "This action underscores the United States' ironclad commitment to the defense of Israel and to defend Americans in Israel from any further ballistic missile attacks by Iran," unquote. The missile defense system is known as THAAD, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. Over the past year, the U.S. has sent over 50,000 tons of armaments and military equipment to Israel, but this marks the first significant deployment of troops to Israel over the past year. A new study by the Cost of War Project at Brown University estimates the U.S. has spent nearly $23 billion during that time on the Israeli military and related operations. In news from Gaza, Israeli warplanes bombed a tent encampment on the grounds of Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Deir al-Balah early this morning. At least four Palestinians were killed, dozens injured, as the bombing set off a massive fire in an area packed with tents housing displaced people who'd sought safety at the hospital. Survivors said they lost everything in the fire.
At 1:10 a.m., we woke up in shock to find a fire rising here. What can I say? I quickly ran with my daughters. I woke them up and quickly rushed to Al-Aqsa Hospital. What can I say? Everything has burned. Everything. As you see, I'm a mother of seven daughters. Where shall I go? My tent has collapsed, destroyed. All our clothes and belongings are gone. Who should we speak to? Where is the safety? We are calling on all countries, the whole world, to stand by our side and stop the war on us. We are exhausted. We've had enough.
The attack came hours after Israel bombed a school sheltering displaced Palestinians in the Nusayr refugee camp. At least 22 people were killed in the attack. The UN reports it had planned to use the site, the Mufti School, to give out polio vaccinations today. On Saturday, another Israeli airstrike in the Nusayr refugee camp killed a family of eight, a mother, father, and their six children, with the youngest being just 8 years old. On Friday, Israeli strikes on the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza killed at least 20 people and injured dozens. Israel's intensifying attacks on northern Gaza comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is considering implementing a surrender or starve policy in the area. On Friday's Doctors Without Borders said thousands of residents are trapped in Jabalia. The group said, quote, nobody's allowed to get in or out. Anyone who tries is getting shot, unquote. One Palestinian diplomat, Majid Bamia, decried the Israeli siege, saying, quote, what is happening in northern Gaza now is a genocide within the genocide, unquote. In news from Israel, four Israeli soldiers died in a Hezbollah drone strike on an army base in Binyamina, south of Haifa. More than 60 people were injured in the attack, which struck a dining hall at the base. This comes as Israel's continuing to attack Lebanon, killing scores of people over the weekend. Meanwhile, Israel's facing international condemnation after repeatedly attacking UN peacekeeping forces in southern Lebanon. Five members of the UN interim force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL, have been injured in recent days. The UN has also accused Israel of forcibly entering and destroying part of a UNIFIL base near the Israeli border. Israel denies the claim. On Thursday, Israeli troops fired at a UNIFIL watchtower, injuring two UNIFIL peacekeepers, both of them Indonesian. The UN has rejected calls by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to remove the peacekeeping forces. On Sunday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned attacks against peacekeepers, quote, may constitute a war crime, unquote. On Friday, the leaders of France, Italy, and Spain issued a joint statement saying the Israeli attacks on peacekeeping forces are unjustifiable and should immediately come to an end. Lebanon's caretaker prime minister, Najib Mikati, also decried the attacks on the UN troops.
The attack on UNIFIL forces by Israel is a crime, condemned by us, and is directed at the international community, whose sanctity is being violated and whose existence is being threatened by targeting the United Nations security forces.
Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with Palestinian journalist Rami Khoury. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez is urging the European Union to suspend its free trade agreement with Israel. Sanchez spoke earlier today in Barcelona.
I believe that the European Commission, the government of all Europeans, must respond once and for all to the formal request that two European countries made, Spain and Ireland, 9 months ago, and suspend the free trade agreement with the government of Israel. And the international community must immediately suspend the shipment of weapons to Israel, as Spain has done, for a very simple but also overwhelming reason, that without weapons, there is no war.
Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with Israeli journalist Meron Rappaport. In campaign news, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump called on Sunday for the National Guard, or U.S. military, to be deployed on U.S. soil to target what he called radical left lunatics, unquote. Trump made the call during an interview on Fox News.
I think the bigger problem are the people from within. We have some very bad people. We have some sick people, radical left lunatics. And I think they're the—and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military, because they can't let that happen.
On Sunday, Trump campaigned in Arizona, where he vowed to hire 10,000 new Border Patrol agents. On Friday, Trump campaigned in the Colorado city of Aurora, where he repeated his false claims that Venezuelan gangs had turned the city into a war zone. Trump claimed migrants have, quote, occupied America. Trump's claims have been denounced by local officials, including Aurora's Republican mayor, Mike Kaufman, who said Trump's claims are, quote, grossly exaggerated and have unfairly hurt the city's identity and sense of safety, Kaufman said. Meanwhile, the former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, has described Donald Trump as, quote, fascist to the core, unquote. Milley told author Bob Woodward, quote, now I realize he's a total fascist. He's the most dangerous person to this country, Milley said. In other campaign news, Vice President Kamala Harris is attempting to expand her appeal to disaffected Republicans. During a campaign stop in Scottsdale, Arizona, Harris vowed to create a bipartisan advisory council.
I have decided also, not only will I have a Republican in my cabinet, but I'm also going to, I was talking to my team about it, I want to create some structure around the following, which is creating a bipartisan Council of Advisors, who can then give feedback on policy as we go forward.
In other campaign news, the Democratic National Committee has released an ad attacking Green Party presidential nominee Jill Stein, claiming a vote for Stein is a vote for Trump. Democrats are planning to run the ad in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. In August, CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, published a survey that showed Dr. Stein is leading Harris among Muslim voters in Arizona, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Stein has criticized Harris for refusing to cut off arms sales to Israel. Taiwan has condemned China for launching large-scale military exercises in the Taiwan Strait. The Chinese Army, Navy, and Air Force drills comes just days after the Taiwanese president, Lai Ching-te, gave a major speech where he said Taiwan is not subordinate to China. Chinese officials said the military drills serve as a, quote, stern warning to the separatist acts of Taiwan independence forces, unquote. The Chinese war games are occurring as Russia's defense minister is making an official visit to Beijing. In Spain, as many as 150,000 protesters marched in Madrid Sunday to demand affordable housing. Protesters organized under the slogan, housing is a right, not a business. Housing advocates have blamed the affordable housing shortage in Spain on short-term rental companies, including Airbnb and Booking.com.
We Spaniards cannot live in our cities. We are being driven out of the cities, not just out of the center. Cities don't belong to us, so we have to regulate it. The government has to regulate prices, to regulate housing.
In labor news, Boeing's announced plans to cut 17,000 jobs, about 10% of its workforce. This comes as 33,000 Boeing workers on the West Coast have entered their second month on strike. Lilly Ledbetter has died at the age of 86. In 1999, Ledbetter sued Goodyear Tire after learning she was paid 40% less than male colleagues doing the same job. After the Supreme Court rejected her pay discrimination claim, Congress passed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which became the first law signed by President Barack Obama in 2009. In 2012, Lilly Ledbetter spoke at the Democratic National Convention.
After nearly two decades of hard, proud work, I found out that I was making significantly less money than the men who were doing the same work as me. I went home, talked to my husband, and we decided to fight. We decided to fight for our family and for your family, too. We sought justice because equal pay for equal work is an American value.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Gaza, where Israeli warplanes bombed a tent encampment on the grounds of Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Deir al-Balah earlier this morning. At least four Palestinians were killed and dozens injured as the bombing set off a massive fire in an area packed with tents housing displaced people who'd sought safety at the hospital. Survivors said they lost everything in the fire.
At 1:10 a.m., we woke up in shock to find a fire rising here. What can I say? I quickly ran with my daughters. I woke them up and quickly rushed to Al-Aqsa Hospital. What can I say? Everything has burned. Everything. As you see, I'm a mother of 7 daughters. Where shall I go? My tent has collapsed, destroyed. All our clothes and belongings are gone. Who should we speak to? Where is the safety? We are calling on all countries, the whole world, to stand by our side and stop the war on us. We are exhausted. We've had enough.
The attack came hours after Israel bombed a school sheltering displaced Palestinians in the Nusayrat refugee camp. At least 22 people were killed in the attack. The UN reports it had planned to use the site, the Mufti School, to give out polio vaccinations today. On Saturday, another Israeli airstrike in the Nusayrat refugee camp killed a family of 8, a mother, father, and their 6 children, with the youngest being just 8 years old. On Friday, Israeli strikes on the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza killed at least 20 people and injured dozens. Israel's intensifying attacks on the northern Gaza comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is considering implementing a surrender or starve policy in the area. On Friday, Doctors Without Borders said thousands of residents are trapped in Jabalia. The group said, quote, nobody's allowed to get in or out. Anyone who tries is getting shot, they said. One Palestinian diplomat, Majid Bamia, decried the Israeli siege, saying, quote, what is happening in northern Gaza now is a genocide within the genocide. For more, we go to northern Gaza, where we're joined by Dr. Mohammed Salha, acting director of the Jabalia Camp's Al-Auda Hospital. He says the hospital will continue its operations and refuse Israel to evacuate under any circumstances. We welcome you, doctor, to Democracy Now! Can you describe what's happening now at Al-Auda?
Yes, actually, this is the 10th day of the Israeli occupation forces siege, Jabalia camp and northern Gaza Strip. And they're doing a lot of massacre this morning. The Israeli occupation forces, they are bombing the distribution center of UNRWA, and many of our people are killed, and a lot of them are injured out of the hospital. As till now, we're receiving 3 martyrs and also 42 of injured people. We are doing now 3 of life-saving operations in our operation theater. And now also we are dealing with another 16 of patients. They are inpatient department. They need operation. Really, the Israeli occupation forces is targeting the civilians people, and they are going to distribution center of UNRWA because they are really hungry. They don't have a food since this from the beginning of this aggression, and the Israeli is not entering the food for Gaza. And if they are entering some of food, it's not enough for these people. So because of that, the people is go to take a food from distribution center, and they are bombing them. We are dealing with many of injuries in our emergency department, and really we are working under a lot of challenges related to that. We don't have, we have shortage in medication, shortage in medical supplies, and we don't have that much fuel. WHO is always trying to enter for the hospitals in the north in Gaza, trying to entering fuel and medication, medical supplies, but always the Israeli occupation forces, they are refuse to enter this for the hospitals, especially in the north in Gaza.
Dr. Mohammed Salha, you there's been reports of dead bodies everywhere in Jabalia. Is that what you see? And describe where exactly Jabalia is and who is still there.
Yes, we have Jabalia. Jabalia camp is a refugee camp. It's in the north in Gaza governorate. And now the Israeli is separate Gaza City on the Jabalia, Beit Lahia, and Beit Hanun. This is the 3 villages is now separated from Gaza and Jabalia Jabalia as a town because they are cutting the streets. Nobody can move from Gaza to Jabalia or from Jabalia to Gaza. Also, the Israelis refuse to refer the some cases. They need also operation and intervention related to the neurosurgery and also vascular surgeries we don't have in the north. And also they are refused. Many of the people who is really dead, we can't, our ambulances can't go to the military area that the Israeli occupation forces, they are there. So that the people is still there, the injured people, or who is dead really, and who is injured, they still in the street till die. Nobody can go there. And actually, there is many of injured coming from the people who is the Israeli is targeting. They are putting the people and the hospitals under siege. Now we have in the north in Gaza from 180,000 till 200,000 persons. It's in the north in Gaza. All of them now without food, without medication, without medical supplies, without fuel to run this generator, without water. Really, the people is now facing a lot of the challenges related. There is no access to water, the filtered water and healthy water. And the people who is also, they are bombing this morning, some people in front of the shelter at the school, UNRWA school in Jabalia camp. These people is going to filling the water in their gallons, and they are bombing these person, these people. Two of them now in we're doing two life saving operation exploration for one girl and one boy. They are boy and girl. They are not doing anything, and they are bombing them this morning when they are filling the water.
On Tuesday, the Israeli military issued expulsion orders for three major hospitals in northern Gaza. Kamel Adwan, your hospital, Al-Auda, and the Indonesian hospital, trapping over 300 critically ill patients, that according to the UN. Are you evacuating the hospital, Al-Auda?
No, we have the Israeli occupation forces. They are warning us through Ministry of Health. They are sending messages that these three hospitals has to evacuate. And from the beginning of this aggression, Al-Auda Hospital is not evacuated from northern Gaza. We are non-government organization. We are working to serve our people. And we are refusing to evacuate Al-Auda Hospital because we have many of injured inside our hospital. I am imagine if there is a last Tuesday that we are evacuate, how many patients will be die? How many women will be die? We are doing many of cesarean section operation for women to get there. We have a normal delivery for a woman, many of women, and they are still now in the hospital because there is the Israeli is now in their areas, so they can't go. So they still this woman. If there is no out the hospital, the people will die in the streets. The women will die in the streets. Because there is no money need to get birth, and there is also injured people. Our department is full of patients. We increased our capacity of beds to respond to this the huge number of people that they need operation and they need health intervention. And we are opening another department nowadays. How we can evacuate, and now we are opening new departments for our people. The people is really in need, so we can't evacuate Al-Auda Hospital. They last May, they entered Al-Auda and requested me to evacuate the hospital. But really, I am refusing to evacuate this hospital. So I told them, please, we can't be evacuated because here we have a lot of injured people. So I will not, and I am staying here with another 15 of my staff, and they are evacuated. They forced evacuate the 130 of my team in the hospital, evacuate them to the Western Gaza, and I am staying with patients. So we will not left our patients behind us. We have to serve them. We have to provide the health care that they need.
Finally, the group Doctors Without Borders says thousands of residents are trapped in Jabalia. The group said, quote, nobody's allowed to get in or out. Anyone who tries to is getting shot. If you can tell us about your own safety and why you're choosing to stay, if in fact that is the case, as they say, anyone who tries to get out is getting shot.
Yes, some of the families is trying to go to the to Gaza, and the Israeli occupation forces, they are shooting them. And actually, they are coming to the hospital. We saw some videos related that the Israeli is shooting the families who was trying to evacuate to Gaza City. And we have a decision to stay. It's simply because we will not left anyone behind us. We will have to serve our people. It's a simple thing. The hospital, we are working under WHO protocol. That means that WHO protocol, it means that we have to work under conflict. So who is, if the hospitals is evacuated, who is will providing services to the people? Who is will, like, save these people? So if there is one person in the Northern Gaza hospital, now the hospital will not evacuate. If there is one person, because we are here to serve our people and to provide the health services for them. This is our decision, and will not left our people behind us.
Dr. Mohamed Salha, acting director of Al Auda Hospital in Jabalia, thank you so much for joining us. Please be safe. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we go to a doctor that just came out of Gaza. Stay with us. Like the Planets Love the Sun by Kramer. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As Israel's intensifying its siege on northern Gaza, Doctors Without Borders said in a statement Friday, five of its staff members were trapped in Jabalia. One of its members reported about 20 people were killed in an airstrike on Al-Yemen Al-Sayed Hospital. For more, we go to Dr. Samer Attar, who has volunteered four times as a surgeon in North Gaza with Doctors Without Borders and other groups, most recently in June. Dr. Attar has worked in North Gaza at Al Auda Hospital, like we just heard from its one of its directors, and Kamel Adwan Hospital. He's also worked in South Gaza at European Hospital, Nasser Hospital, and Al-Aqsa Hospital. Can you describe, Doctor, what you are hearing on the ground as we just listened to the director of Al Auda and how desperate the situation is in Jabalia?
And every day the news is desperate. Every day you wake up to text messages and videos from nurses and doctors who I worked with, who we all worked with. I mean, even last night, we got the horrifying videos of people being bombed and burned alive in front of Al-Aqsa Hospital. So every day is a breaking point. Every day is a desperate rush for food, water, fuel, and medicine and shelter.
I wanted to go to the Kamel Adwan Hospital. And this is a clip of a doctor who is there describing what's going on the ground within this hospital where you, Dr. Samer Attar, have also worked.
What is happening is a process of attrition, a siege, and artillery shelling. Tanks are present, and the occupation forces are stationed at the walls of these schools. They are surrounding Shadi Abu Ghazala School, Al-Fallujah School, and Hafsa bin Omar Government School. The army is now at the rear walls of these schools. We hope the world intervenes to lift the siege on the Jabalia camp, find solutions for the wounded, and provide the necessary medical supplies to these injured people.
That's Hani Hamad, a doctor, describing what's happening. And now we're going to go to a doctor inside the Kamal Adwan Hospital, Dr. Hassam Abu Safia, the director of the hospital, in another video.
We're facing a new challenge and a catastrophic situation that will worsen in the coming hours if there's no fuel supply for emergency services. We are now talking about a sensitive department that provides advanced health services, and we have 24 hours left. It's not just Kamal Adwan Hospital. Al Adwa and the Indonesian hospital are also on the verge of running out of the remaining fuel. We are facing a genuine health disaster if fuel is not delivered, as it would result in catastrophe. We hope there will be attentive ears that will listen to us and assist in enhancing health services.
Dr. Hassam Abu Safia, director of the Kamal Adwan Hospital, describing what's going on in his hospital. Dr. Samer Attar, you worked there as well as other places in North Gaza. Explain what's actually happening. Israel dividing Gaza, the north off from the rest of Gaza, and what this means for the people inside and the targeting in particular of these hospitals.
Yeah, I know the people on that video. I worked with them. They're just truly remarkable. But when we worked in the north, I mean, that whole area has always been cut off. When you work in that area, you feel cut off from the rest of the world. You might as well be at the top of Mount Everest because they're always waiting for fuel. They're always waiting for food. Some days we just didn't have with the equipment we needed to do what we needed to do. So no gowns, no drapes, instruments weren't sterile. There'd be so many people trying to get through the front door after a bombing attack. There'd be no place to step. The floors would be smeared with blood and body parts, and you'd be stepping over dead bodies to try to get to the living. And most people died. I mean, some days the most you could do is just hold people's hand and look them in the eyes and watch them die, either because they were malnourished, they were starving, or we had no blood to give them. Every day it felt like that. Every day in the north felt like that. And the directors there only got a chance to breathe once a shipment of fuel and medicine and food came in. And that was always a Hail Mary. That was always felt like it was last minute. And now that it's really cut off and they're not getting supplies in, they're not getting fuel in, they're not getting medicines in, they're not getting food in, now they're really desperate because before people would arrive last minute, they would arrive before the point of no return, and now that seems to be happening.
And can you talk specifically about the children in these hospitals? The number of children who are died, who are maimed, who've had amputations, well over 1,000 now are alive but amputated. The situation there and this latest situation where one of the hospitals was the site of what was supposed to be a vaccination program today.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you leave all of them behind. That's the hard part. You hate to see anyone suffer or die, but when you're just seeing innocent kids, it's not just the physical wounds, too. I remember one little girl, she was caught in an airstrike, and she was buried alive for 12 hours next to her dead parents. And then she got dug out, and we had to perform emergency surgery on her leg. There's another little girl, 5 years old. She came in with both legs just mangled after an explosion, and the mom was just begging us not to amputate her legs. And we both knew her legs weren't going to make it. But I mean, those are the conversations we have to have. And I remember another 7-year-old girl came in with her arm just missing. Her arm was just it was blown off. And the surgeon across from me just a very stoic, unemotional, strong, resilient surgeon just broke down in tears. He had it after 6 months. Just couldn't take it anymore. So that toll is very exacting. I mean, the physical wounds you can get to heal. You can get an amputation wound to heal, but it's the psychic scars of seeing your parents buried alive, or you're buried alive and they're dead, and you're looking at them. Everyone in Gaza, every bed you go to has a horrifying story of of loss, of losing a home, losing a loved one, losing a limb, losing an eye. And it never ends. And it just, every day you wake up to more and more of it. And that's just what makes it so horrifying.
I wanted to play a clip from your New York Times opinion short documentary that you created, Dr. Samer Attar, in your diary of 2 weeks volunteering in Gaza.
The World Health Organization has documented 450 attacks on the healthcare system since October 7. The staff of this hospital told me they were stripped to their underwear and handcuffed. And after one attack,
they killed them by gunshot. Two hygienists and one nurse.
Sorry.
Israel says Hamas hides in these facilities.
This is the entrance to the emergency room of Indonesian hospital, which is currently non-functional.
When this hospital was bombed, it was reported that at least a dozen people were killed. But that's a massive understatement. Because when this CT scanner was destroyed, countless Gazans were given a death sentence. This patient, both of these patients, every single one of these patients needs a CT scan to diagnose their injury.
For this patient, in normal situation, we need to plan CT.
So just keep an eye on him and make sure nothing bad happens. And if it does, we do our best.
We cannot do anything.
As we begin to wrap up, Dr. Samer Attar, that is a clip from an editorial, video editorial you did for the New York Times. And here you're also talking about medical workers being shot and handcuffed. Explain.
Yeah, hospitals should be safe. Hospitals represent havens for communities. They represent a community's capacity to heal and recover. And it's not a political issue. It's a medical one. Hospitals shouldn't be targeted. Hospitals shouldn't be used for military purposes. They should be places where if you're sick or injured, you can go and be treated without having to worry about being bombed in the hospital or in front of the hospital. I can't emphasize that point any more than just having said what I said.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Samer Attar volunteered 4 times as a surgeon in North Gaza with Doctors Without Borders and other organizations, most recently in June. He is a surgeon at Northwestern Medicine in Chicago. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, we go to Tel Aviv to speak with the Israeli journalist Meron Rapaport. And then we'll talk about Israel's attack on UNIFIL. Stay with us.
سيد الحمام رسم البرود لبس الغوار شم الهوى أكل الهوى شاغل عقول سكان بيروت
by Yasmin Hamdan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's intensifying attacks and siege on northern Gaza comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is considering implementing a surrender or starve policy in the area. We're joined now by the Israeli journalist Meron Rapaport, recently wrote an article for 972 headlined, "A Plan to Liquidate Northern Gaza is Gaining Steam." Meron is an editor and writer at the independent Israeli news site Local Call, a columnist at 972 magazine. On Saturday, he was awarded the prestigious Golden Dove for Peace by the International Research Institute Disarmament Archive in Rome, Italy. In his acceptance speech, he said, although journalism alone cannot bring peace, it can open spaces of humanity. We welcome you, Maron, to Democracy Now! If you can start off by talking about what you are saying, what the policy of Israel now is in Gaza, the separation of Gaza, what it means as you talk about the starving of Gaza.
Hello. Of course, we don't know exactly what is the Israeli plan now. The general plan, what is called the plan offered by ex-Major General Giora Eiland, speaks about offering the Palestinian in northern Gaza, north of the Netzarim corridor, meaning all Gaza City and its surrounding, offering them a week to evacuate Gaza, go south to the humanitarian area, what is called, near the Muassi, near Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. And then after a week, there will be a total siege on northern Gaza, and a siege meaning no food, no water, no electricity, no medicine, nothing. And in a week time, all those who stay will be considered terrorists that could be hit. The idea is that the civil population will leave, only the Hamas militant will stay, and therefore Israel will be able to clean this area. This is the plan by General Eiland. The plan was not adopted officially, neither by the government, although it is said that Netanyahu is considering it, and nor by the army officially. The operation now in Jabalia that we heard about is officially not part of this plan, but it does seem that many parts of this plan are being implemented on the ground. We heard that there's no supplies coming into northern Gaza at all in the last 2 weeks. We are seeing this evacuation order to the population of northern Gaza and to the hospitals in northern Gaza. So we have the sense here that this plan is being actually implemented without being officially adopted.
One of the people who escaped the Jabalia refugee camp told the Financial Times, it seems that the Jabalia camp will be deleted from Gaza's geography. If you can talk more about the intentions of Israel right now. I mean, just in the last week, more than 150 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli airstrikes around the camp, thousands more trapped, Israel encircling the area, leaving only one exit. And what do, as we speak to you in Tel Aviv, you are an Israeli journalist, what does the Israeli population understand what's happening in Gaza? In the United States and the corporate broadcast media, you hardly see anything about Gaza now. It's much more focused on Lebanon. And these major networks do not keep repeating that Israel does not allow international journalists into Gaza.
So, again, the Israeli public is also much focused on Lebanon. But even and certainly after what happened last night, when a drone attack on an army base in Binyamina, which is some 100 kilometers south of the Lebanese border, killing four soldiers. So the whole attention is on Lebanon, and this is maybe one of the reasons that we see this attack in Jabalia, because the international attention is on Lebanon and not in Gaza. anyhow, even before that, there was very little attention in the Israeli media and Israeli public to the consequences of the Israeli attacks on Gaza. And if there was some attention, it was mainly seen as what Israel is doing is right, that destroying Gaza, destroying physically Gaza City and its neighborhoods and the camps around it is a logical thing to do as a response to October 7, because if there will be no Gaza, then there will be no threat. That is how very, very many Israelis see it. So this is, generally speaking, the Israeli response. People don't really understand the connection between this and returning the hostages. Don't see a connection with this and continuing of the war. I think there is a large support for this. Although I must say, of course, the images are not shown on Israeli TV. People don't see you know, children burning alive in Gaza, as in the Arab world, that elsewhere maybe people see. So the whole of the information is not in front of most of the Israeli public.
I wanted to go to a piece that you wrote in 972. Haaretz also wrote about this surrender or starve plan that was proposed last fall by Major General Eilon. Explain who Major General Eilon is, the idea that anyone who remains behind would face hunger and be treated as Hamas operatives and legitimate military targets, as you've described, Meron, and what exactly this was. Will constitute in Gaza?
Again, the plan by Major General Island, in the ex-general, is, as I said, to give the population a week an opportunity to live within a week, and then there will be a siege, and those who stay will be considered as terrorists. Island himself is not really a right-wing in the sense he's not part of the religious right. He's not even a supporter of Netanyahu. He comes from a military background, even what is in Israel considered center-left background. So he is not a fanatic supporter of Netanyahu, not at all. He says, he claims in all his interviews that this conforms, that this plan conforms with the international law, that is a legitimate way of war as long as you give the population, the civil population, time to leave. What is does not exist really in his plan, and I think it's not by chance, it's not detailed in his plan, is first of all, what will happen with this population if they will leave? Will they be able to come back? Because this is not written in the plan. It says only that they will have to leave, they will be given humanitarian aid, but it's not, there's no promise that they will be able to come back even in a month's time, 2 months' time, 3 months' time, to their home. So this is not there. So therefore, the fear for another Nakba is there. And more importantly is he does not detail what will happen if most of the population, as we see now in the description we heard just now, most of the population refuses to leave. It refuses because it saw what happened to the people who left in the beginning of the war, that there's no safe shelter in Gaza, neither in the south. They refuse also for political reasons, because they're afraid that this is the beginning of a new Nakba, and the idea is to really clean Gaza and maybe open it to resettlement by Israelis. So he does not say what will happen if tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of Palestinians Palestinian will decide to stay after this week. What will happen to them? Will Israel starve 500,000 people, 300,000 people, 200,000 people? Nobody really knows the exact number of the people north of Netzarim corridor in the northern part of Gaza Strip. So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about Israel committing an extermination of hundreds of tens of thousands of people if they will choose to stay? This is not detailed in his plan, and I think it's not by chance it's not detailed.
Low-lying, really somewhat low-tech drone that Hezbollah sent into Israel near Haifa. Explain the significance of Benyamina, this military base that houses the Golani Brigade, and the deaths of four Israeli soldiers and the wounding of 60, what this means for Israel right now.
I think, of course, the base itself is not that important. It's a relatively small base, quite far from the border. It's a training base. It's not a combat. It's not for combat units. It's for training. So the base itself is not extremely important. But the fact that a drone arrived so far, almost 100 kilometers from the Lebanese border, and was very precise, hitting a dining room in this army bases. What it made is the whole euphoria that was in very present in Israel after the pager attacks, after the assassination of Nasrallah and all the leadership of Hezbollah, where most Israelis thought that here Israel is winning the war, that the war will be over, that the Hamas and Hezbollah will surrender, and that Iran will back off. What we are seeing now, that this is far from over. And the fact that Hezbollah, after being hit so hard, is still able to hit at the heart of Israel is, of course, very destabilizing, you know, this state of euphoria that was existed for a few weeks, but I think now it's dissipating.
Meron Rappaport, I want to thank you for being with us, editor and writer at the independent Israeli news site Local Call, columnist at 972 Magazine. His piece headlined, "A Plan to Liquidate Northern Gaza is Gaining Steam," and has writes for The Nation magazine. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show looking at Israel's intensifying attacks in Lebanon, where officials said Sunday Israeli strikes across Lebanon during the weekend killed at least 50 people. Israel's facing international condemnation after repeatedly attacking UN peacekeeping forces in southern Israel. At least five members of UNIFIL, that's the UN interim force in Lebanon, have been injured in recent days. UN's also accused Israel of forcibly entering and destroying a part of the UNIFIL base near the Israeli border, and rejected calls by the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to remove the peacekeeping forces from the region. On Sunday, UN Secretary General Guterres warned attacks against peacekeepers, quote, may constitute a war crime. For more, we go to Boston, where we're joined by Rami Khoury, Palestinian-American journalist, senior public policy fellow at American University of Beirut. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Rami. In these last 6 minutes that we have, if you can talk about the significance of the attack on the UN base, the injuring of the two UN Indonesian peacekeepers. The UNIFIL is made up of peacekeepers from a number of different countries, including Indonesia and Italy and other places. Essentially, is this attack on the United Nations?
Yes, that's true. It's essentially an attack on the UN. It's an attack against the modern system of the rule of law that the victorious powers in World War II set up after 1945, the UN, development agencies, humanitarian law, codes, all kinds of things that were supposed to make the world safe from another genocide as happened in Nazi Germany. And the message of Israel is, this is nonsense. None of this makes sense to us. We're not going to respect any of this stuff. People can make up any laws, they can make up any courts, they can do whatever they want around the world. The people of Israel, and that there's a difference between the people of Israel and the Jewish people, because not all Jewish people in the world agree with this, but the people of Israel seem to accept fully the policy of the Israeli government now to kill and burn alive and torture people in Palestine and now in Lebanon in any way they want to achieve what the Israeli government says is its security. But this is a flawed policy, because what we've seen around the region for years is that this kind of savagery only brings about greater responses and greater determination to fight it. Now to the point where the state of Iran, not just a militia somewhere, but the government of Iran is involved in the battle, and the U.S. is sending more troops and anti-aircraft defense systems to Israel and expanding its bases around the region. So the message of Israel is, we don't care about anything except Israel, and we'll destroy the whole region if we need to. And this is something that is possible. I don't think it's going to happen. But a regional conflagration with the U.S. and Iran now facing off against each other, and Iran and Israel firing missiles back and forth at each other, and Hezbollah and Iran both showing that they have the technology to evade Israel's air defense systems and hit precise targets, that they're still only hitting military targets. They haven't gone after civilians as the Israelis have. This is the bigger picture that we have to look at in the region. And the Israelis don't seem to understand that the Palestinian people and Lebanese people and Iranians and everybody else in the region are human beings, just like the Israelis and Jewish people are human beings. And they should go back to Masada, the great fortress on the overlooking the Dead Sea, where in 73 AD, the Jewish forces there and preferred to die by suicide rather than to be killed or taken slaves by the Romans who had laid siege to them. And now the situation is reversed, that the Israelis are the Romans. They're laying siege to parts of Gaza. They're destroying parts of Lebanon. They're threatening Iran. And the people are not going to surrender. They will die, and many of them are dying. People, doctors, as you just heard, saying, we're not going to evacuate our hospitals. We'll die with our patients. This is a human reaction. It's not a Palestinian or an Arab or an Islamic. It's a human reaction that the Jewish people showed the world in their history and in their biblical texts, which are widely adopted, that this is how human beings survive. They survive by defending their dignity and their physical life. And this is where we are now in this battle. And the UN is one of the targets. UNRWA is something that Israel has been trying to shatter for years. They don't allow Guterres to come into Israel anymore. This is a terrible trajectory, and people will fight back against it.
Rami, in this last minute we have, you now have, in light of all of this, still the U.S. is sending 100 troops. This is completely new, and this anti-missile THAAD system. And this in the midst of this, to say the least, extremely significant election, which is neck and neck between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Harris very close in these battleground states that have large Arab American, Lebanese American, Muslim American communities like Michigan. What is the effect of this?
We've seen the effect already that not only Arab and Muslim Americans, but a coalition that they have created with Black Americans and Hispanic Americans, progressive Jews, church groups, labor unions, academics, a big coalition has emerged focused on the refusal as Americans to be a part of a genocidal war by Israel against Palestinians. Americans don't want this to be their legacy. They don't want this to be their policy. And they're saying, well, we'll vote for somebody else. We don't care who's president, because there's not much difference between Kamala Harris and Biden and Trump and anybody else. They've been killing Palestinians and Arabs since the Zionist movement started 100 years ago, which aimed to get the Palestinians out of Palestine and replace them with a Jewish state, which has happened. They have a Jewish state. They want to keep expanding, it seems, and this is not going to work. This is a recipe for catastrophe. So the American sending more arms is what America does in its foreign policy as its primary means of...
We have 5 seconds, Rami.
Yeah, so American militarism and Israeli barbarism are only going to create a catastrophe for everybody. And now that Gaza may influence...
We're going to have to leave it there. Rami Khoury, journalist, thanks for joining us.
G. Gordon Liddy, I urge you to tune in to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your FM dial. If you don't, I'll break both your legs.